Now we come to the church in Smyrna, and this is the martyr church. This is the church that died for him. Now, the word Smyrna, we get our word myrrh from it. Actually, it means suffering. And this city is still in existence. The name it has today, the Turkish name, may lead you astray, but it's Izmir. But it's the same city. And it's been in continuous occupation from the time it was founded. And it goes back a long ways. I have been there. In fact, we stay in Izmir when we visit that area. There's a lovely hotel there, the Grand Efes Hotel. And it's in a very commercial city. There are those that tell us that Izmir will someday, and not too many days hence, it will be larger than Istanbul. It will certainly be a larger commercial center. And because of that, and the tremendous population there, and it practically covers up so much of the ruins of the ancient city that you're apt to miss the beauty of it. Now, I have some pictures that I have taken, that slides I use when I give an illustrated message, and I try to call attention to the beauty of that harbor. It's one of the most beautiful harbors, and a very large one, by the way. It's one of the loveliest cities of Asia. It's called a flower. It's called a crown, an ornament, and it's been called the crown of all Asia. And the Acropolis is on Mount Paphos. In fact, the early city that goes back to about 2000 was a Hittite city at that time. It was around the slope of Mount Paphos. And later on, Alexander the Great had a great deal to do with the building of it, the city that was so beautiful. It had wide boulevards along the slopes of Mount Paphos. And then on top was the city. It was called the crowning city because it had a row of flowers and a hedge that went all the way around, and then myrtle trees that went all the way around. And it was adorned with beautiful temples and noble buildings. That was the temple of Zeus, the temple of Cybele, and Cybele was actually Diana, and a temple of Aphrodite and Apollo and Asclepius, and also Izmir had a theater. And it had an Odeon, that is, a music center. It was the home of music, and there was a stadium there, and it was in that stadium where Polycarp, who was a student of John the Apostle, and of course knew him, he was the bishop of Smyrna, and he was martyred in the stadium, burned alive, in 155 A.D. Now, in Christian literature, Smyrna means suffering. St. John, in his letter addressed to the church, said, "I know your suffering and your poverty." Now, it is one of the few cities that is still in existence today, having had continuous habitation from the very beginning. And one other church that the Lord Jesus addresses, Philadelphia, the two churches that he had no word of condemnation for, these are the two churches that have had continuous existence, none of the others. Their lampstand has really been moved, but there are a few Christians in Smyrna. They're undercover. I'm told there are no Christians in Ephesus, that little Muslim Turkish town. Now, in Izmir, there are a few, and they have made a very indirect contact with us when we've been there. They do not want to come out in the open because Christians are persecuted over there even today in Turkey. Now, there's a great deal we could say about this city, but we want now to see something of the mechanics of the format that the Lord Jesus uses in writing. Now, this city covers the period from about 100 A.D. to approximately 314 A.D., from the death of John to the Edict of Toleration by Constantine, which was given in 313 A.D., and it ended the persecution of Christians, not only in Smyrna, but all over the Roman Empire, and especially Rome. We find that the leaders of the church were first killed at the beginning. Now let's come to the text, and I'm coming here to verse 8 of chapter 2, and we have here the Lord Jesus addressing this church, and it's his briefest message, and it was all commendatory. Everything that he has to say was good. Now let me read verse 8, and I'm going to read from my translation here. To the messenger of the church in Smyrna, write, "These things saith the first and the last, who became dead and lives." The Lord Jesus will reach back and take out of that vision of the things thou hast seen the glorified Christ as our great high priest in the midst of the lampstand. He'll take out one of the descriptions and one of the things that's said about him to address each church. And I think each one has a particular reference to the church. And he chose from the vision of himself the first and the last who became dead and lived. Now, the first and last means there was nothing before him and there's nothing to follow him. He has the final disposition of all things. He is the one in charge. Now, the persecuted believers needed to know this, that he was the one in charge and that it was in the plan and purpose of God. Now he said, who became dead and lived. That has a real message for martyrs. It speaks of the death and resurrection of Christ, and his experience with death identified him with the 5 millions who were martyred during this period. Fox says there were 5 million that died for Christ in this period. He was triumphant over death and can save to the uttermost those who are enduring persecution and martyrdom.